Jason said. Hazel and Piper exchanged a look of total exasperation. Boys. Percy, for his part, wanted to hear every detail about the aquatic camp. He kept coming back to one point.
They didn't want to meet me?
It wasn't that, Hazel said. Just undersea politics, I guess. The merpeople are territorial. The good news is they're taking care of that aquarium in Atlanta. And they'll help protect the Argo, too, as we cross the Atlantic. Percy nodded absently.
But they didn't want to meet me?
Annabeth swatted his arm. Come on, seaweed brain. We've got other things to worry about. She's right, Hazel said. After today, Nico has less than 2 days. The fish centaur said we have to rescue him. He's essential to the quest somehow. She looked around defensively, as if waiting for someone to argue. No one did. Piper tried to imagine what Nico D'Angelo was feeling, stuck in a jar with only 2 pomegranate seeds left to sustain him, and no idea whether he would be rescued. It made Piper anxious to reach Rome, even though she had a horrible feeling she was sailing toward her own sort of prison, a dark room filled with water.
Nico must have information about the doors of death, Piper said. We'll save him, Hazel. We can make it in time. Right, Leo?
What?
Leo tore his eyes away from the controls.
Oh, yeah. We should reach the Mediterranean tomorrow morning. Then spend the rest of that day sailing to Rome. Or flying, if I can get the stabilizer fixed by then.
Jason suddenly looked as though his brownie with peach preserves didn't taste so good. Which will put us in Rome on the last possible day for Nico. 24 hours to find him, at most. Percy crossed his legs.
And that's only part of the problem. There's the Mark of Athena, too.
Annabeth didn't seem happy with the change of topic. She rested her hand on her backpack, which, since they'd left Charleston, she always seemed to have with her. She opened the bag and brought out a thin bronze disc the diameter of a donut. This is the map that I found at Fort Sumter. It's... She stopped abruptly, staring at the smooth bronze surface.
It's blank!
Percy took it and examined both sides.
It wasn't like this earlier?
No. I was looking at it in my cabin and...
Annabeth muttered under her breath.
It must be like the Mark of Athena. I can only see it when I'm alone. It won't show itself to other demigods.
Frank scooted back like the disc might explode. He had an orange juice mustache and a brownie crumb beard that made Piper want to hand him a napkin.
What did it have on it? Frank asked nervously. And what is the Mark of Athena? I still don't get it.
Annabeth took the disc from Percy. She turned it in the sunlight, but it remained blank. The map was hard to read, but it showed a spot on the Tiber River in Rome. I think that's where my quest starts. The path I've got to take to follow the mark.
Maybe that's where you meet the river god Tiberinus, Piper said. But what is the mark?
The coin, Annabeth murmured. Percy frowned.
What coin?
Annabeth dug into her pocket and brought out a silver drachma. I've been carrying this ever since I saw my mom at Grand Central. It's an Athenian coin. She passed it around. While each demigod looked at it, Piper had a ridiculous memory of show and tell in elementary school.
An owl,
Leo noted.
Well, that makes sense. I guess the branch is an olive branch? But what's this inscription? A-O-E. Area of effect?
It's Alpha, Theta, Epsilon, Annabeth said. In Greek it stands for Of the Athenians. Or you could read it as The Children of Athena. It's sort of the Athenian motto.
Like SPQR for the Romans, Piper guessed.
Annabeth nodded. Anyway, the Mark of Athena is an owl, just like that one. It appears in fiery red. I've seen it in my dreams. Then twice at Fort Sumter. She described what had happened at the fort. The voice of Gia, the spiders in the garrison, the mark burning them away. Piper could tell it wasn't easy for her to talk about. Percy took Annabeth's hand.
I should have been there for you.
But that's the point, Annabeth said. No one can be there for me. When I get to Rome, I'll have to strike out on my own. Otherwise, the mark won't appear. I'll have to follow it to... to the source.
Frank took the coin from Leo. He stared at the owl.
The giant's bane stands golden pale, one with pain from a woven jail.
He looked up at Annabeth.
What is it? This thing at the source?
Before Annabeth could answer, Jason spoke.
A statue, he said. A statue of Athena. At least, that's my guess.
Piper frowned.
You said you didn't know.
I don't, but the more I think about it, there's only one artifact that could fit the legend.
He turned to Annabeth.
I'm sorry. I should have told you everything I've heard, much earlier. But honestly, I was scared. If this legend is true...
I know, Annabeth said. I figured it out, Jason. I don't blame you. But if we manage to save the statue, Greek and Romans together, don't you see? It could heal the rift.
Hold on. Percy made a timeout gesture. What statue?
Annabeth took back the silver coin and slipped it into her pocket.
The Athena Parthenos, she said. The most famous Greek statue of all time. It was 40 feet tall, covered in ivory and gold. It stood in the middle of the Parthenon in Athens.
The ship went silent, except for the waves lapping against the hull.
Okay, I'll bite, Leo said at last. What happened to it?
It disappeared, Annabeth said.
Leo frowned.
How does a 40-foot-tall statue in the middle of the Parthenon just disappear?
That's a good question, Annabeth said. It's one of the biggest mysteries in history. Some people thought the statue was melted down for its gold or destroyed by invaders. Athens was sacked a number of times. Some thought the statue was carried off.
By Romans, Jason finished. At least that's one theory. And it fits the legend I heard at Camp Jupiter. To break the Greek spirit, the Romans carted off the Athena Parthenos when they took over the city of Athens. They hid it in an underground shrine in Rome. The Roman demigod swore it would never see the light of day. They literally stole Athena so she could no longer be the symbol of Greek military power. She became Minerva, a much tamer goddess.
And the children of Athena have been searching for the statue ever since, Annabeth said. Most don't know about the legend, but in each generation, a few are chosen by the goddess. They're given a coin like mine. They follow the mark of Athena, a kind of magical trail that links them to the statue, hoping to find the resting place of the Athena Parthenos and get the statue back.
Piper watched the two of them, Annabeth and Jason, with quiet amazement. They spoke like a team, without any hostility or blame. The two of them had never really trusted each other. Piper was close enough to both of them to know that. But now, if they could discuss such a huge problem so calmly, the ultimate source of Greek/Roman hatred, maybe there was hope for the two camps after all. Percy seemed to be having similar thoughts, judging from his surprised expression.
So if we, I mean you, find the statue, what would we do with it? Could we even move it?
I'm not sure, Annabeth admitted. But if we could save it somehow, it could unite the two camps. It could heal my mother of this hatred she's got, tearing her two aspects apart.
And maybe the statue has some sort of power that could help us against the giants.
Piper stared at Annabeth with awe, just starting to appreciate the huge responsibility her friend had taken on. And Annabeth meant to do it alone.
This could change everything, Piper said. It could end thousands of years of hostility. It might be the key to defeating Gia. But if we can't help you...
She didn't finish, but the question seemed to hang in the air. Was saving the statue even possible? Annabeth squared her shoulders. Piper knew she must be terrified inside, but she did a good job hiding it.
I have to succeed, Annabeth said simply. The risk is worth it. Hazel twirled her hair pensively. I don't like the idea of you risking your life alone. But you're right. We saw what recovering the Gold Eagle Standard did for the Roman Legion. If this statue is the most powerful symbol of Athena ever created...
It could kick some serious booty, Leo offered.
Hazel frowned.
That wasn't the way I'd put it, but yes.
Except, Percy took Annabeth's hand again. No child of Athena has ever found it.
Annabeth, what's down there? What's guarding it? If it's got to do with spiders...
One through pain from a woven jail, Frank recalled. Woven, like webs?
Annabeth's face turned as white as printer paper. Piper suspected that Annabeth knew what awaited her, or at least that she had a very good idea. She was trying to hold down a wave of panic and terror.
We'll deal with that when we get to Rome, Piper suggested, putting a little charm speak in her voice to soothe her friend's nerves. It's going to work out. Annabeth is going to kick some serious booty, too. You'll see.
Yeah, Percy said. I learned a long time ago. Never bet against Annabeth.
Annabeth looked at them both gratefully. Judging from their half-eaten breakfasts, the others still felt uneasy. But Leo managed to shake them out of it. He pushed a button and a loud blast of steam exploded from Festus's mouth, making everyone jump.
Well, he said, good pep rally, but there's still a ton of things to fix on this ship before we get to the Mediterranean. Please report to Supreme Commander Leo for your superfund list of chores.
Piper and Jason took charge of cleaning the lower deck, which had been thrown into chaos during the monster attack. Reorganizing sick bay and battening down the storage area took them most of the day, but Piper didn't mind. For one thing, she got to spend time with Jason. For another, last night's explosions had given Piper a healthy respect for Greek fire. She didn't want any loose vials of that stuff rolling through the corridors in the middle of the night. As they were fixing up the stables, Piper thought about the night Annabeth and Percy had spent down here accidentally. Piper wished that she could talk with Jason all night, just curl up on the stable floor and enjoy being with him. Why didn't they get to break the rules? But Jason wasn't like that. He was hardwired to be a leader and set a good example. Breaking the rules didn't come naturally to him. No doubt Raina admired that about him. Piper did too, mostly. The one time she'd convinced him to be a rebel was back at the wilderness school when they had sneaked onto the roof at night to watch a meteor shower. That's where they'd had their first kiss. Unfortunately, that memory was a trick of the mist, a magical lie implanted in her head by Hera. Piper and Jason were together now, in real life, but their relationship had been founded on an illusion. If Piper tried to get the real Jason to sneak out at night, would he do it? She swept the hay into piles. Jason fixed a broken door on one of the stables. The glass floor hatch glowed from the ocean below. A green expanse of light and shadow that seemed to go down forever. Piper kept glancing over, afraid she'd see a monster's face peeping in or the water cannibals from her grandfather's old stories. But all she saw was an occasional school of herring. As she watched Jason work, she admired how easily he did each task, whether it was fixing a door or oiling saddles. It wasn't just his strong arms and his skillful hands, though Piper liked those just fine, but the way he acted so upbeat and confident. He did what needed to be done without complaint. He kept his sense of humor, despite the fact that the guy had to be dead on his feet after not having slept the night before. Piper couldn't blame Raina for having a crush on him. When it came to work and duty, Jason was Roman to the core. Piper thought about her mother's tea party in Charleston. She wondered what the goddess had told Raina a year ago, and why it had changed the way Raina treated Jason. Had Aphrodite encouraged or discouraged her to like Jason? Piper wasn't sure, but she wished her mom hadn't appeared in Charleston. Regular mothers were embarrassing enough. Godly glamour moms who invited your friends over for tea and guy talk, that was just mortifying. Aphrodite had paid so much attention to Annabeth and Hazel it had made Piper uneasy. When her mom got interested in somebody's love life, usually that was a bad sign. It meant trouble was coming. Or, as Aphrodite would say, twists and turns. But also, Piper was secretly hurt not to have her mother to herself. Aphrodite had barely looked at her. She hadn't said a word about Jason. She hadn't bothered explaining her conversation with Raina at all. It was almost as if Aphrodite no longer found Piper interesting.
Piper had gotten her guy. Now it was up to her to make things work, and Aphrodite had moved on to newer gossip as easily as she might toss out an old copy of a tabloid magazine.
"All of you are such excellent stories," Aphrodite had said. "I mean, girls."
Piper hadn't appreciated that, but part of her had thought, "Fine, I don't want to be a story. I want a nice, steady life with a nice, steady boyfriend." If only she knew more about making relationships work. She was supposed to be an expert, being the head counselor for Aphrodite Cabin. Other campers at Camp Half-Blood came to her for advice all the time. Piper had tried to do her best, but with her own boyfriend, she was clueless. She was constantly second-guessing herself, reading too much into Jason's expressions, his moods, his offhand comments. Why did it have to be so hard? Why couldn't there be a happily ever after ride into the sunset feeling all the time?
"What are you thinking?" Jason asked.
Piper realized she'd been making a sour face. In the reflection of the glass bay doors, she looked like she'd swallowed a teaspoon of salt.
"Nothing," she said. "I mean, a lot of things. Kind of all at once."
Jason laughed. The scar on his lip almost disappeared when he smiled. Considering all the stuff he'd been through, it was amazing that he could be in such a good mood.
"It's going to work out," he promised. "You said so yourself."
"Yeah," Piper agreed. "Except I was just saying that to make Annabeth feel better."
Jason shrugged.
"Still, it's true. We're almost to the ancient lands. We've left the Romans behind."
"And now they're on their way to Camp Half-Blood to attack our friends."
Jason hesitated, as if it was hard for him to put a positive spin on that.
"Chiron will find a way to stall them. The Romans might take weeks to actually find the camp and plan their attack. Besides, Reyna will do what she can to slow things down. She's still on our side. I know she is."
"You trust her?"
Piper's voice sounded hollow, even to herself.
"Look, Pipes, I told you, you've got nothing to be jealous about."
"She's beautiful. She's powerful. She's so... Roman."
Jason put down his hammer. He took her hand, which sent a tingle up her arm. Piper's dad had once taken her to the Aquarium of the Pacific and shown her an electric eel. He told her that the eel sent out pulses that shocked and paralyzed its prey. Every time Jason looked at her or touched her hand, Piper felt like that.
"You're beautiful and powerful," he said. "And I don't want you to be Roman. I want you to be Piper. Besides, we're a team, you and me."
She wanted to believe him. They'd been together, really, for months now. Still, she couldn't get rid of her doubts, any more than Jason could get rid of the SPQR tattoo burned on his forearm. Above them, the ship's bell rang for dinner. Jason smirked. "We'd better get up there. We don't want Coach Hedge tying bells around our necks." Piper shuddered. Coach Hedge had threatened to do that after the Percy Annabeth scandal, so he'd know if anyone sneaked out at night.
"Yeah," she said regretfully, looking at glass doors below their feet. "I guess we need dinner. And a good night's sleep."
Chapter 26. Piper. The next morning, Piper woke to a different ship's horn, a blast so loud it literally shook her out of bed. She wondered if Leo was pulling another joke. Then the horn boomed again. It sounded like it was coming from several hundred yards away, from another vessel. She rushed to get dressed. By the time she got up on deck, the others had already gathered, all hastily dressed except for Coach Hedge, who had pulled the night watch. Frank's Vancouver Winter Olympics shirt was inside out. Percy wore pajama pants and a bronze breastplate, which was an interesting fashion statement. Hazel's hair was all blown to one side, as though she'd walked through a cyclone. And Leo had accidentally set himself on fire. His t-shirt was in charred tatters. His arms were smoking. About 100 yards to port, a massive cruise ship glided past. Tourists waved at them from 15 or 16 rows of balconies. Some smiled and took pictures. None of them looked surprised to see an ancient Greek trireme. Maybe the mist made it look like a fishing boat, or perhaps the cruisers thought the Argo II was a tourist attraction. The cruise ship blew its horn again, and the Argo II had a shaking fit. Coach Hedge plugged his ears.
Do they have to be so loud?
They're just saying hi, Frank speculated.
What?
Hedge yelled back. The ship edged past them, heading out to sea. The tourists kept waving. If they found it strange that the Argo II was populated by half-asleep kids in armor and pajamas and a man with goat legs, they didn't let on.
Bye,
Leo called, raising his smoking hand.
Can I man the ballista?
Hedge asked.
No,
Leo said through a forced smile. Hazel rubbed her eyes and looked across the glittering green water.
Where are...
Oh.
Wow.
Piper followed her gaze and gasped. Without the cruise ship blocking their view, she saw a mountain jutting from the sea less than half a mile to the north. Piper had seen impressive cliffs before. She'd driven Highway 1 along the California coast. She'd even fallen down the Grand Canyon with Jason and flown back up. But neither was as amazing as this massive fist of blinding white rock thrust into the sky. On one side, the limestone cliffs were almost completely sheer, dropping into the sea over 1,000 feet below, as near as Piper could figure. On the other side, the mountain sloped in tiers, covered in green forest, so that the whole thing reminded Piper of a colossal sphinx, worn down over the millennia, with a massive white head and chest and a green cloak over its back.
The Rock of Gibraltar, Annabeth said in awe. At the tip of Spain. And over there?
She pointed south, to a more distant stretch of red and ochre hills.
That must be Africa. We're at the mouth of the Mediterranean.
The morning was warm, but Piper shivered. Despite the wide stretch of sea in front of them, she felt like she was standing at an impassable barrier. Once in the Mediterranean, the Mare Nostrum, they would be in the ancient lands. If the legends were true, their quest would become 10 times more dangerous.
What now? She asked. Do we just sail in?
Why not? Leo said. It's a big shipping channel. Boats go in and out all the time.
Not triremes full of demigods, Piper thought. Annabeth gazed at the Rock of Gibraltar. Piper recognized that brooding expression on her friend's face. It almost always meant that she anticipated trouble.
In the old days, Annabeth said, they called this area the Pillars of Hercules. The rock was supposed to be one pillar. The other was one of the African mountains. Nobody is sure which one.
Hercules, huh? Percy frowned. That guy was like the Starbucks of ancient Greece. Everywhere you turn, there he is.
A thunderous boom shook the Argo II. Though Piper wasn't sure where it came from this time, she didn't see any other ships, and the skies were clear. Her mouth suddenly felt dry.
So, these Pillars of Hercules, are they dangerous?
Annabeth stayed focused on the white cliffs, as if waiting for the Mark of Athena to blaze to life.
For Greeks, the pillars marked the end of the known world. The Romans said the pillars were inscribed with a Latin warning.
Non plus ultra.
Percy said. Annabeth looked stunned.
Yeah, nothing further beyond. How did you know?
Percy pointed.
Because I'm looking at it.
Directly ahead of them, in the middle of the straits, an island had shimmered into existence. Piper was positive no island had been there before. It was a small hilly mass of land, covered in forests and ringed with white beaches. Not very impressive compared to Gibraltar. But in front of the island, jutting from waves about 100 yards offshore, were 2 white Grecian columns as tall as the Argo's masts. Between the columns, huge silver words glittered underwater. Maybe an illusion, or maybe inlaid in the sand.
Non plus ultra.
Guys, do I turn around?
Leo asked nervously.
Or?
No one answered. Maybe because, like Piper, they had noticed the figures standing on the beach. As the ship approached the columns, she saw a dark-haired man in purple robes, his arms crossed,
staring intently at their ship as if he were expecting them. Piper couldn't tell much else about him from this distance, but judging from his posture, he wasn't happy. Frank inhaled sharply.
Could that be...
Hercules, Jason said. The most powerful demigod of all time. The Argo II was only a few hundred yards from the columns now.
Need an answer, Leo said urgently. I can turn, or we can take off. The stabilizers are working again, but I need to know quick.
We have to keep going, Annabeth said. I think he's guarding these straits. If that's really Hercules, sailing or flying away wouldn't do any good. He'll want to talk to us.
Piper resisted the urge to use charm speak. She wanted to yell at Leo, fly, get us out of here. Unfortunately, she had a feeling that Annabeth was right. If they wanted to pass into the Mediterranean, they couldn't avoid this meeting.
Won't Hercules be on our side? She asked hopefully. I mean, he's one of us, right?
Jason grunted. He was a son of Zeus. But when he died, he became a god. You can never be sure with gods.
Piper remembered their meeting with Bacchus in Kansas. Another god who used to be a demigod. He hadn't been exactly helpful.
Great, Percy said. Seven of us against Hercules.
And a satyr, Hedge added. We can take him.
I've got a better idea, Annabeth said. We send ambassadors ashore. A small group, one or two at most. Try to talk with him.
I'll go, Jason said. He's a son of Zeus. I'm the son of Jupiter. Maybe he'll be friendly to me.
Or maybe he'll hate you, Percy suggested. Half-brothers don't always get along.
Jason scowled. Thank you, Mr. Optimism.
It's worth a shot, Annabeth said. At least Jason and Hercules have something in common. And we need our best diplomat, somebody who's good with words.
All eyes turned to Piper. She tried to avoid screaming and jumping over the side. A bad premonition gnawed at her gut, but if Jason was going ashore, she wanted to be with him. Maybe this hugely powerful god would turn out to be helpful. They had to have good luck once in a while, didn't they?
Fine, she said. Just let me change my clothes.
Once Leo had anchored the Argo II between the pillars, Jason summoned the wind to carry him and Piper ashore. The man in purple was waiting for them. Piper had heard tons of stories about Hercules. She'd seen several cheesy movies and cartoons. Before today, if she had thought about him at all, she'd just roll her eyes and imagine some stupid hairy dude in his 30s with a barrel chest and a gross hippie beard, with a lion skin over his head and a big club, like a caveman. She imagined he would smell bad, belch, and scratch himself a lot, and speak mostly in grunts. She was not expecting this. His feet were bare, covered in white sand. His robes made him look like a priest, though Piper couldn't remember which rank of priest wore purple. Was that cardinals? Bishops? And did the purple color mean he was the Roman version of Hercules rather than the Greek? His beard was fashionably scruffy, like Piper's dad and his actor friends wore theirs. The sort of, I just happened not to shave for 2 days and I still look awesome, look. He was well-built, but not too stocky. His ebony hair was close-cropped, Roman style. He had startling blue eyes like Jason's, but his skin was coppery, as if he'd spent his entire life on a tanning bed. The most surprising thing, he looked about 20. Definitely no older. He was handsome, in a rugged but not at all caveman way. He did, in fact, have a club, which lay in the sand next to him, but it was more like an oversized baseball bat, a 5-foot-long polished cylinder of mahogany with a leather hand grip studded in bronze. Coach Hedge would have been jealous. Jason and Piper landed at the edge of the surf. They approached slowly, careful not to make any threatening moves. Hercules watched them with no particular emotion, as if they were some form of seabird he had never noticed before.
Hello, Piper said. Always a good start.
What's up? Hercules said. His voice was deep, but casual. Very modern. He could have been greeting them in the high school locker room.
Not much, Piper winced.
Well,
Actually, a lot. I'm Piper. This is Jason. We...
Where's your lion skin? Jason interrupted. Piper wanted to elbow him, but Hercules looked more amused than annoyed.
It's 90 degrees out here, he said. Why would I wear my lion skin? Do you wear a fur coat to the beach?
I guess that makes sense. Jason sounded disappointed.
It's just that the pictures always show you with a lion skin.
Hercules glared at the sky accusingly, like he wanted to have words with his father Zeus.
Don't believe everything you hear about me.
Being famous isn't as fun as you might think.
Tell me about it, Piper sighed. Hercules fixed those brilliant blue eyes on her.
Are you famous?
My dad. He's in the movies.
Hercules snarled.
Don't get me started with the movies. Gods of Olympus, they never get anything right. Have you seen one movie about me where I look like me?
Piper had to admit, he had a point. I'm surprised you're so young.
Being immortal helps. But yes, I wasn't so old when I died, not by modern standards. I did a lot during my years as a hero.
Too much, really.
His eyes drifted to Jason.
Son of Zeus, eh?
Jupiter, Jason said.
Not much difference, Hercules grumbled. Dad's annoying in either form. Me? I was called Heracles. Then the Romans came along and named me Hercules. I didn't really change that much, though lately just thinking about it gives me splitting headaches.
The left side of his face twitched. His robes shimmered, momentarily turning white, then back to purple.
At any rate, Hercules said, if you're Jupiter's son, you might understand. It's a lot of pressure.
Enough is never enough. Eventually, it can make a guy snap.
He turned to Piper. She felt like a thousand ants were crawling up her back. There was a mixture of sadness and darkness in his eyes that seemed not quite sane and definitely not safe.
As for you, my dear, Hercules said, be careful. Sons of Zeus can be... well, never mind.
Piper wasn't sure what that meant. Suddenly she wanted to get as far from this god as possible, but she tried to maintain a calm, polite expression.
So, Lord Hercules, she said, we're on a quest. We'd like permission to pass into the Mediterranean.
Hercules shrugged.
That's why I'm here. After I died, Dad made me the doorkeeper of Olympus. I said, great, palace duty, party all the time. What he didn't mention is that I'd be guarding the doors to the ancient lands, stuck on this island for the rest of eternity. Lots of fun.
He pointed at the pillars rising from the surf.
Stupid columns. Some people claim I created the whole Strait of Gibraltar by shoving mountains apart. Some people say the mountains are the pillars. What a bunch of Augean manure. The pillars are pillars.
Right, Piper said. Naturally. So, can we pass?
The god scratched his fashionable beard.
Well, I have to give you the standard warning about how dangerous the ancient lands are. Not just any demigod can survive the Mare Nostrum. Because of that, I have to give you a quest to complete. Prove your worth, blah, blah, blah. Honestly, I don't make a big deal of it. Usually I give demigods something simple, like a shopping trip, singing a funny song, that sort of thing. After all those labors I had to complete for my evil cousin Eurystheus, well, I don't want to be that guy, you know?
Appreciate it, Jason said.
Hey, no problem.
Hercules sounded relaxed and easygoing, but he still made Piper nervous. That dark glint in his eyes reminded her of charcoal soaked in kerosene, ready to go up at a moment's notice.
So anyway, Hercules said, what's your quest?
Giants, Jason said, we're off to Greece to stop them from awakening Gia.
Giants, Hercules muttered, I hate those guys. Back when I was a demigod hero? But never mind.
So which god put you up to this? Dad? Athena? Maybe Aphrodite? He raised an eyebrow at Piper.
As pretty as you are, I'm guessing that's your mom.
Piper should have been thinking faster, but Hercules had unsettled her. Too late, she realized the conversation had become a minefield.
Hera sent us, Jason said. She brought us together to... Hera! Suddenly Hercules' expression was like the cliffs of Gibraltar, a solid, unforgiving sheet of stone.
We hate her too, Piper said quickly. Gods, why hadn't it occurred to her? Hera had been Hercules' mortal enemy. We didn't want to help her. She didn't give us much choice, but...
But here you are, Hercules said, all friendliness gone. Sorry, you two. I don't care how worthy your quest is. I don't do anything that Hera wants. Ever.
Jason looked mystified. But I thought you made up with her when you became a god.
Like I said, Hercules grumbled, don't believe everything you hear. If you want to pass into the Mediterranean, I'm afraid I've got to give you an extra hard quest.
But we're like brothers, Jason protested. Hera's messed with my life, too. I understand.
You understand nothing, Hercules said coldly. My first family? Dead. My life wasted on ridiculous quests. My second wife? Dead, after being tricked into poisoning me and leaving me to a painful demise. And my compensation? I got to become a minor god. Immortal so I can never forget my pain. Stuck here as a gatekeeper, a doorman, a butler for the Olympians. Now you don't understand. The only god who understands me even a little bit is Dionysus, and at least he invented something useful. I have nothing to show except bad film adaptations of my life.
Piper turned on the charm speak.
That's horribly sad, Lord Hercules. But please go easy on us. We're not bad people.
She thought she'd succeeded. Hercules hesitated.
Then his jaw tightened and he shook his head. On the opposite side of this island, over those hills, you'll find a river. In the middle of that river lives the old god Achelous.
Hercules waited, as if this information should send them running in terror.
And? Jason asked. And? Hercules said. I want you to break off his other horn and bring it to me.
He has horns, Jason said.
Wait, his other horn?
What?
Figure it out, the god snapped. Here, this should help.
He said the word help like it meant hurt. From under his robes, Hercules took a small book and tossed it to Piper. She barely caught it. The book's glossy cover showed a photographic montage of Greek temples and smiling monsters. The Minotaur was giving the thumbs up. The title read, The Hercules Guide to the Mare Nostrum.
Bring me that horn by sundown, Hercules said. Just the two of you. No contacting your friends. Your ship will remain where it is. If you succeed, you may pass into the Mediterranean.
And if we don't? Piper asked, pretty sure she didn't want the answer.
Well, Achelous will kill you, obviously, Hercules said. And I will break your ship in half with my bare hands and send your friends to an early grave.
Jason shifted his feet.
Couldn't we just sing a funny song? I'd get going, Hercules said coldly. Sundown, or your friends are dead.
Chapter 27 Piper The Hercules Guide to the Mare Nostrum didn't help much with snakes and mosquitoes.
If this is a magic island, Piper grumbled, why couldn't it be a nice magic island?
They tromped up a hill and down into a heavily wooded valley, careful to avoid the black and red striped snakes sunning themselves on the rocks. Mosquitoes swarmed over stagnant ponds in the lowest areas. The trees were mostly stunted olives, cypress, and pines. The chirring of the cicadas and the oppressive heat reminded Piper of the reds in Oklahoma during the summer. So far, they hadn't found any river.
We could fly, Jason suggested again. We might miss something, Piper said. Besides, I'm not sure I want to drop in on an unfriendly god. What was his name? Etch-a-Sketch?
Achelous. Jason was trying to read the guidebook while they walked, so he kept running into trees and stumbling over rocks.
Says here he's a potamus.
He's a hippopotamus?
No, Potamus, a river god. According to this, he's the spirit of some river in Greece.
Since we're not in Greece, let's assume he's moved, Piper said. Doesn't bode well for how useful that book is going to be.
Anything else? Says Hercules fought him one time, Jason offered.
Hercules fought 99% of everything in ancient Greece.
Yeah, let's see. Pillars of Hercules. Jason flipped a page. Says here this island has no hotels, no restaurants, no transportation. Attractions? Hercules and two pillars.
Huh, this is interesting.
Supposedly the dollar sign, you know, the S with the two lines through it, that came from the Spanish coat of arms, which showed the pillars of Hercules with a banner curling between them.
Great, Piper thought. Jason finally gets along with Annabeth, and her brainiac tendencies start rubbing off on him.
Anything helpful? She asked.
Wait, here's a tiny reference to Echoloas. This river god fought Hercules for the hand of the beautiful Deianira. During the struggle, Hercules broke off one of the river god's horns, which became the first cornucopia.
Corn of what?
It's that Thanksgiving decoration, Jason said. The horn with all the goodies spilling out. We have some in the mess hall at Camp Jupiter. I didn't know the original one was actually some guy's horn.
And we're supposed to take his other one, Piper said. I'm guessing that won't be so easy. Who was Deianira?
Hercules married her, Jason said. I think... doesn't say here. But I think something bad happened to her. Piper remembered what Hercules had told them. His first family, dead. His second wife, dead after being tricked into poisoning him. She was liking this challenge less and less. They trudged across a ridge between two hills, trying to stay in the shade, but Piper was already soaked with perspiration. The mosquitoes left welts on her ankles, arms, and neck, so she probably looked like a smallpox victim. She'd finally gotten some alone time with Jason, and this was how they spent it. She was irritated with Jason for having mentioned Hera, but she knew she shouldn't blame him. Maybe she was just irritated with him in general. Ever since Camp Jupiter, she'd been carrying around a lot of worry and resentment. She wondered what Hercules had wanted to tell her about the sons of Zeus. They couldn't be trusted? They were under too much pressure? Piper tried to imagine Jason becoming a god when he died, standing on some beach guarding the gates to an ocean long after Piper and everyone else he knew in his mortal life was dead. She wondered if Hercules had ever been as positive as Jason. More upbeat, confident, quick to comfort. It was hard to picture. As they hiked down into the next valley, Piper wondered what was happening back on the Argo II. She was tempted to send an Iris message, but Hercules had warned them not to contact their friends. She hoped Annabeth could guess what was going on and didn't try to send another party ashore. Piper wasn't sure what Hercules would do if he were bothered further. She imagined Coach Hedge getting impatient and aiming a ballista at the man in purple, or Eidolons possessing the crew and forcing them to commit suicide by Hercules. Piper shuddered. She didn't know what time it was, but the sun was already starting to sink. How had the day passed so quickly? She would have welcomed sundown for the cooler temperatures, except it was also their deadline. A cool night breeze wouldn't mean much if they were dead. Besides, tomorrow was July 1st, the calends of July. If their information was correct, it would be Nico D'Angelo's last day of life, and the day Rome was destroyed. Stop, Jason said. Piper wasn't sure what was wrong. Then she realized she could hear running water up ahead. They crept through the trees and found themselves on the bank of a river. It was maybe 40 feet wide, but only a few inches deep. A silver sheet of water racing over a smooth bed of stones. A few yards downstream, the rapids plunged into a dark blue swimming hole. Something about the river bothered her. The cicadas in the trees had gone quiet. No birds were chirping. It was as if the water was giving a lecture and would only allow its own voice. But the more Piper listened, the more inviting the river seemed. She wanted to take a drink. Maybe she should take off her shoes. Her feet could really use a soak. And that swimming hole,
It would be so nice to jump in with Jason and relax in the shade of the trees, floating in the nice cool water. So romantic. Piper shook herself. These thoughts weren't hers. Something was wrong. It almost felt like the river was charm-speaking. Jason sat on a rock and started taking off his shoes. He grinned at the swimming hole like he couldn't wait to get in.
"Cut it out!" Piper yelled at the river.
Jason looked startled.
"Cut what out?"
"Not you," Piper said.
"Him."
She felt silly pointing at the water, but she was certain it was working some sort of magic, swaying their feelings. Just when she thought she had lost it and Jason would tell her so, the river spoke.
"Forgive me. Singing is one of the few pleasures I have left."
A figure emerged from the swimming hole as if rising on an elevator. Piper's shoulders tensed. It was the creature she'd seen in her knife blade. The bull with the human face. His skin was as blue as the water. His hooves levitated on the river's surface. At the top of his bovine neck was the head of a man with short curly black hair. A beard done in ringlets. Ancient Greek style, deep, mournful eyes behind bifocal glasses, and a mouth that seemed set in a permanent pout. Sprouting from the left side of his head was a single bull's horn, a curved black and white one like warriors might turn into drinking cups. The imbalance made his head tilt to the left so that he looked like he was trying to get water out of his ear.
"Hello,"
he said sadly.
"Come to kill me, I suppose."
Jason put his shoes back on and stood slowly.
Well? "No," Piper intervened. "I'm sorry. This is embarrassing. We didn't want to bother you, but Hercules sent us."
"Hercules?"
The bullman sighed. His hooves pawed the water as if ready to charge.
"To me, he'll always be Heracles. That's his Greek name, you know. The glory of Hera."
"Funny name," Jason said, "since he hates her."
"Indeed,"
the bullman said.
"Perhaps that's why he didn't protest when the Romans renamed him Hercules. Of course, that's the name most people know him by. His brand, if you will. Hercules is nothing if not image conscious."
The bullman spoke with bitterness but familiarity, as if Hercules was an old friend who had lost his way.
"You're Achelous?" Piper asked.
The bullman bent his front legs and lowered his head in a bow, which Piper found both sweet and a little sad.
"At your service, river god extraordinaire, once the spirit of the mightiest river in Greece, now sentenced to dwell here on the opposite side of the island from my old enemy. Oh, the gods are cruel. But whether they put us so close together to punish me or Hercules, I have never been sure."
Piper wasn't sure what he meant, but the background noise of the river was invading her mind again, reminding her how hot and thirsty she felt, how pleasant a nice swim would be. She tried to focus.
"I'm Piper," she said. "This is Jason. We don't want to fight. It's just that Hercules, whoever he is, got mad at us and sent us here."
She explained about their quest to the ancient lands to stop the giants from waking Gia. She described how their team of Greeks and Romans had come together, and how Hercules had thrown a temper tantrum when he found out Hera was behind it. Achelous kept tipping his head to the left, so Piper wasn't sure if he was dozing off or dealing with one horn fatigue. When she was done, Achelous regarded her as if she were developing a regrettable skin rash.
"Ah, my dear, the legends are true, you know. The spirits, the water cannibals."
Piper had to fight back a whimper. She hadn't told Achelous anything about that.
How?
"River gods know many things," he said. "Alas, you are focusing on the wrong story. If you had made it to Rome, the story of the flood would have served you better."
"Piper?" Jason asked. "What's he talking about?" Her thoughts were suddenly as jumbled as kaleidoscope glass. The story of the flood, if you had made it to Rome.
I'm not sure, she said, though the mention of a flood story rang a distant bell. Acheloas, I don't understand.
No, you don't,
the river god sympathized.
Poor thing.
Another girl, stuck with a son of Zeus.
Wait a minute, Jason said. It's Jupiter, actually. And how does that make her a poor thing? Acheloas ignored him.
My girl, do you know the cause of my fight with Hercules?
It was over a woman, Piper recalled. Deianira?
Yes.
Acheloas heaved a sigh.
And do you know what happened to her?
Piper glanced at Jason. He took out his guidebook and began flipping through pages. It doesn't really... Acheloas snorted indignantly.
What is that?
Jason blinked. Just the Hercules Guide to Mare Nostrum. He gave us the guidebook, so...
That is not a book, Acheloas insisted. He gave you that just to get under my skin, didn't he? He knows I hate those things.
You hate books?
Piper asked.
Bah!
Acheloas' face flushed, turning his blue skin eggplant purple.
That's not a book!
He pawed the water. A scroll shot from the river like a miniature rocket and landed in front of him. He nudged it open with his hooves. The weathered yellow parchment unfurled, covered with faded Latin script and elaborate hand-drawn pictures.
This is a book,
Acheloas said.
Oh, the smell of sheepskin. The elegant feel of the scroll unrolling beneath my hooves. You simply can't duplicate it in something like that.
He nodded indignantly at the guidebook in Jason's hand.
You young folks today and your new-fangled gadgets, bound pages, little compact squares of text that are not hoof-friendly. That's a bound book, a B-book, if you must. But it's not a traditional book. It'll never replace the good old-fashioned scroll.
I'll just put this away now. Jason slipped the guidebook in his back pocket the way he might holster a dangerous weapon. Acheloas seemed to calm down a little, which was a relief to Piper. She didn't need to get run over by a one-horned bull with a scroll obsession.
Now,
Acheloas said, tapping a picture on his scroll.
This is Deianira.
Piper knelt down to look. The hand-painted portrait was small, but she could tell the woman had been very beautiful. With long, dark hair, dark eyes, and a playful smile that probably drove guys crazy.
Princess of Caledon,
the river god said mournfully.
She was promised to me, until Hercules butted in. He insisted on combat.
And he broke off your horn? Jason guessed.
Yes,
Acheloas said.
I could never forgive him for that. Horribly uncomfortable, having only one horn. But the situation was worse for poor Deianira. She could have had a long, happy life married to me.
A man-headed bull, Piper said, who lives in a river.
Exactly,
Acheloas agreed.
It seems impossible she would refuse, eh? Instead, she went off with Hercules. She picked the handsome, flashy hero over the good, faithful husband who would have treated her well. What happened next? Well, she should have known. Hercules was much too wrapped up in his own problems to be a good husband. He had already murdered one wife, you know. Hera cursed him, so he flew into a rage and killed his entire family. Horrible business. That's why he had to do those 12 labors as penance.
Piper felt appalled.
Wait, Hera made him crazy, and Hercules had to do the penance?
Acheloas shrugged.
The Olympians never seemed to pay for their crimes. And Hera has always hated the sons of Zeus, or Jupiter.
He glanced distrustfully at Jason.
At any rate, my poor Deianira had a tragic end. She became jealous of Hercules's many affairs. He gallivanted all over the world, you see, just like his father Zeus, flirting with every woman he met. Finally, Deianira got so desperate she listened to bad advice. A crafty centaur named Nessus told her that if she wanted Hercules to be faithful forever, she should spread some centaur blood on the inside of Hercules's favorite shirt. Unfortunately, Nessus was lying because he wanted revenge on Hercules. Deianira followed his instructions, but instead of making Hercules a faithful husband...
Centaur blood is like acid, Jason said.
Yes,
Achilles said.
Hercules died a painful death. When Deianira realized what she'd done, she...
The river god drew a line across his neck.
That's awful,
Piper said.
And the moral, my dear,
Achilles said.
Beware the sons of Zeus.
Piper couldn't look at her boyfriend. She wasn't sure she could mask the uneasiness in her eyes. Jason would never be like Hercules, but the story played into all her fears. Hera had manipulated their relationship just as she had manipulated Hercules. Piper wanted to believe that Jason could never go into a murderous frenzy like Hercules had. Then again, only 4 days ago, he had been controlled by an Eidolon and almost killed Percy Jackson.
Hercules is a god now,
Achilles said.
He married Hebe, the youth goddess, but still he is rarely at home. He dwells here on this island, guarding those silly pillars. He says Zeus makes him do this, but I think he prefers being here to Mount Olympus, nursing his bitterness and mourning his mortal life. My presence reminds him of his failures, especially the woman who finally killed him. And his presence reminds me of poor Deianira, who could have been my wife.
The bullman tapped the scroll, which rolled itself up and sank into the water.
Hercules wants my other thorn in order to humiliate me,
Achilles said.
Perhaps it would make him feel better about himself, knowing that I'm miserable too. Besides, the horn would become a cornucopia. Good food and drink would flow from it, just as my power causes the river to flow. No doubt Hercules would keep the cornucopia for himself. It would be a tragedy and a waste.
Piper suspected the noise of the river and the drowsy sound of Echoloas's voice were still affecting her thoughts, but she couldn't help agreeing with the river god. She was starting to hate Hercules. This poor bull man seemed so sad and lonely. Jason stirred. I'm sorry, Echoloas. Honestly, you've gotten a bum deal. But maybe, well, without the other horn, you might not be so lopsided. It might feel better.
Jason,
Piper protested. Jason held up his hands. Just a thought. Besides, I don't see that we have many choices. If Hercules doesn't get that horn, he'll kill us and our friends.
He's right,
Echoloas said.
You have no choice. Which is why I hope you'll forgive me.
Piper frowned. The river god sounded so heartbroken she wanted to pat his head.
Forgive you for what?
I have no choice either,
Echoloas said.
I have to stop you.
The river exploded and a wall of water crashed over Piper. Chapter 28 Piper. The current grabbed her like a fist and pulled her into the deep. Struggling was useless. She clamped her mouth shut, forcing herself not to inhale, but she could barely keep from panicking. She couldn't see anything but a torrent of bubbles. She could only hear her own thrashing and the dull roars of the rapids. She just about decided this was how she would die, drowning in a swimming hole on an island that didn't exist. Then, as suddenly as she'd been pulled under, she was thrust to the surface. She found herself at the center of a whirlpool, able to breathe but unable to break free. A few yards away, Jason broke the surface and gasped. His sword in one hand, he swung wildly, but there was nothing to attack. 20 feet to Piper's right, Echoloas rose from the water.
I'm really sorry about this,
he said. Jason lunged toward him, summoning the winds to lift him out of the river, but Echoloas was quicker and more powerful. A curl of water slammed into Jason and sent him under once more.
Stop it!
Piper screamed.
Using charm speak wasn't easy when she was floundering in a whirlpool, but she got Echolois's attention.
"I'm afraid I can't stop,"
said the river god.
"I can't let Hercules have my other horn. It would be..."